So one of their fears was, you know, we would niche down too much. What we learned that we really wanted to work with people in social impact, but then specifically we wanted to work with women in social impact, women founders. So that was one of the biggest worries that we had, but then actually that's what worked for us the best. Since focusing on women and discovering no code, so those three things, like social impact, women founders, and no code, like everything just took off.
Tap into the minds of change makers creating real impact on people and our planet. It's time to live your purpose. I'm your host, Dale Wilkinson, and this is Good Makers. Hey, welcome to episode 42 of Good Makers. I'm so glad you chose to put me in your ear. If this is your first time, hit subscribe so you can get each week's episode automatically downloaded into your podcast feed. I get the absolute pleasure to interview social entrepreneurs about the problem they decided to tackle and how they actually went about it. I do this so you're left not only inspired, but you have tips and advice on how you can go out and be a change maker yourself. On this episode, I speak with Sissa Lieses, founder of an all-women product design studio that also only works with female-led social impact companies. Sissa's story is one of grit and tenacity that saw her immigrate from the Philippines to Canada, and how she took bold moves in the middle of the pandemic to ensure that her and the team were making an impact while doing work that they love. We talk about why Sissa made the decision to be super focused with the clients they want to work with and how it all changed once they made that decision. She also talks us through their framework of design thinking whenever they start a new project and why it's really important for impact-focused companies to go through this process. And Sissa talks about how no-code is democratizing app building and what tools you should try if you want to create a web or mobile app of your own. Let's jump into my chat with my good friend, Sissa Lieses. Sissa, how you doing? Welcome
Pretty
to the show.
Good. Thank you.
I'm so excited to talk to you. It's been a minute since we caught up last, but we have so many similarities. So it's always fun to talk to you.
It's actually quite a timely, we like be having this chat because at this like exact same time was when I was on, you know, I was on an island and I was like trying to fill up an application to a job that I saw that was posted on Good Gigs. And that was when I decided to focus everything on social impact. So
hang on, I didn't know that story. What island were you on and what job were you applying to?
Okay, so I was in the Philippines. I was back home. This was my first time to visit after 5 years, you know, since I moved to Toronto. Like, I haven't really been back home. So I was like there for a few months already. And of course, I had to, you know, it's the Philippines. I had to go to the beach, and I did have like a long stay at that beach. But then COVID was also starting to happen at the same time. So I was stuck there for a little bit, which wasn't so bad. And I was really... We've been running the agency for like a year then, but it was just, you know, we weren't happy. We weren't like satisfied with what we were doing. We were getting work done. You know, we were growing our team, but it just wasn't the place that we wanted to be. And then, you know, like we realized that, okay, we were like doing so much effort, like just trying to attract all sorts of people to us, trying to do all sorts of services for, you know, we try to give all the services that an agency should give to be considered what we thought we needed to serve to be considered an agency. We thought like, okay, like what do we actually like doing? Who were the projects that we liked working on, the clients that we liked working with? And, you know, that came down to, you know, all the social impact like clients that we've had. At that time, it was super scary because it's not the easiest easiest funded space, like my impression then. So we weren't sure like if there was going to be like a market fit or anything like that. But that's when I came across good gigs. And, you know, seeing all of the postings, you know, seeing like that there was a community around it, and really just seeing like the effort you put into it just gave me a lot of, you know, confidence to actually do that. You know, like I just went on there the first time and I was like, okay, like there's so many of these jobs that I could actually apply to, and it just made so much sense for me to do. And so I was just sitting at this hut in this resort by the beach, and that's where I was filling out my first application to all of your postings.
Oh my God. Well, first of all, you're going to make me cry. I think it's so kind of...
I'm trying to.
It's very cool, like listening to, you know, how people find good gigs and actually using it and such. So I didn't know that, that's how you came across it. So right now you are the founder of Design Off the Boat, which is an all-women team product development studio for all-women founders. Now we're going to jump into that. I want to talk about your background first. How did you actually get into that line of work?
I didn't really, you know, go seek it out. For a while, I was working, doing hip hop events. So I lived in it. Yeah, I thought I'd be a rapper and I thought I'd be a skater. When I realized that I wasn't good at either, I'm actually pretty good at rapping, but when I realized, you know, like this isn't the, you know, the path that is for me, I just started organizing the skate events, graffiti events, and competitions, and really just like hip hop gigs. And we would work with our university. So we lived on a university belt. In the Philippines, you have, you know, these luxury university buildings, and you have, you know, informal settlers like sandwiched in between, which is ironic because people come to that area to be like, okay, I'm going to go to school, I'm going to live out my dreams, and I'm going to save the world. And then they leave that place and it still looks as bad as it is. And it's not just like, not just for aesthetic, but then it's in the heart of the city. So like it's densely packed with different kinds of peoples and like situations. So, but because, you know, like how hip hop culture is, with you have your hip hop crews and you have your skaters, and, you know, they naturally find these pockets of spaces like along that university belt to convene and actually build a community organically. So we were seeing that. So we actually, besides throwing their parties and, you know, working with the universities in the areas to like let us use the spaces for the parties, they also actually let us, you know, close down the roads at a certain time of night so we could teach the kids there how to skate, learn how to paint, and how to rap. Yeah. So eventually, you know, I wanted to do more. I went up to the dean of the school at that time and I said, we want to do more. And the dean then, her name is Abby Cabanilla, and she said, you know what, I just got approved for a budget to come up with a project, like any kind of, you know, a youth project for that. And that's where it all started, really. You know, like I found like a great friend and a great mentor in her, and together, you know, we prototyped a creative trade school, just bringing the community in, prototyping projects for the community. The school was amazing at letting us use the resources as well, and like, you know, faculty were like super involved. They taught us design thinking. They brought user experience studio in from Singapore, that, you know, that was my first taste of design thinking. I didn't learn it in school technically. I had already graduated by then, but this was when that all started, working, you know, with multidisciplinary, like, you know, professors and stuff. So we had to learn how to get along and be constructive. And, you know, from that creative trade school, prototyping those like projects for the community and really just improving urban livability, that all ended up as our first social impact, social enterprise incubator called the Hub of Innovation for Inclusion.
That's very cool. And what were you studying at the time?
Well, I had finished multimedia design. I've worked for, you know, like advertising. I was working on like big brands too. And it was just, it wasn't what was making me happy. I literally lived there. I grew up in that area as well. So it was hard for me to just look away. So it was also hard for me to come here to Canada while everything was being built. And then I'm just like, okay, now what do I do now? The problem sets here are different. Like I don't have that kind of area to work with. But what I saw was product design seemed to be at the forefront, or it was the trend at the time, you know, creating apps for social impact. And it just seemed aligned with what I was learning too when I got here.
Was that kind of a no-brainer for you coming over to Canada and starting to get into the product design work? Did you think of, you know, just going to any bigger agency, or did you always want to start your own thing? And then with the social impact element, was that always kind of top of mind for you as well? Or is it just like, let's find my grounding, let's get a job?
To be honest, like, I was only supposed to stay for 3 months, right? I wanted to go back and I wanted to finish the work that we started. But, you know, my family's been here like for 15 years. And of course, you know, I got here and there were all these like opportunities, you know, my honeymoon phase with Toronto, right? Like the job opportunities that I had, the flashing lights and, you know, being in North America, like coming from a place like the Philippines, you know, like it's, it got me to stay for the next 5 years. I ended up working for, you know, a corporate tech toy company was designing, but then it wasn't really in the social impact route. I tried to deviate from it. You know, as a designer, my dream was always to be part of like a big agency, you know, that was doing like super cool advertisements, you know, maybe music videos. But it wasn't like social impact work always came back.
So then let's go back to a year ago, what you were saying just earlier about you were trying to do too much or try and provide every kind of service to companies. Since then, with design off the boat, how has that evolved your mission and who you serve?
Okay, so one of their fears was, you know, we would niche down too much. What we learned that we really wanted to work with people in social impact, but then specifically we wanted to work with women in social impact, women founders. So that was one of the biggest worries that we had, but then actually that's what worked for us the best. Since focusing on women and discovering no code, so those three things, like social impact, women founders, and no code, like everything just took off because, you know, it really just helped eliminate like a lot of the barriers that women were facing. One, we were able to create a safe space for women to even operate as entrepreneurs. You know, we understand what they were going through because we were, you know, bootstrapping our own agency ourselves. We're trying to work in tech and we're trying to do this on limited resources, you know, across, you know, being 13,000 kilometers apart. It's my co-founder is actually in Indonesia as well. So we had to be like very scrappy and learn a lot of things how to like operate. And then discovering no code just sealed the deal for us. It was like, now we could build anything with in less time, with less cost, and within, you know, a safe space.
I'm going to dig into each three.
Yeah. All right.
Social impact, no code, and women founders. First of all, women founders, when you were making that decision, what has the response been like? Obviously, it's working for you. You've been able to hone in on a particular audience. Have you ever had to kind of turn away work?
We have had to turn away work. And I think like that's when we started turning away work, we knew that we knew what we actually wanted. And, you know, that made us feel like, oh, like we've actually grown. So like working with women founders, one of the things that we noticed was a lot of them were looking for technical co-founders. A lot of them thought that they actually had to be a technical person. They were going to go either take a course or, you know, try to get so much funding first to get someone to develop their product before they could even like test it out. And us coming in, telling them that no code is a thing, and this is something that we could help you build in less time and less resources, that really just opened up a lot of like enthusiasm, like from the women founders that we were working with. So the way we work with our clients is we work with design sprints and we use design thinking to do that. So that's a whole other unpacking.
Let's unpack that a little bit, right? Like, let's pretend that, because for me personally, like building good gigs was my first introduction into product design and development. For folks that are listening that don't know what product design or product development is, what is it that you actually do? And what is design thinking?
This is my favorite part. The way we work with our clients is we do a couple of design thinking workshops, and that goes into a week of design sprints, and then we go into the no-code build. So with the design thinking piece, you get a technical scope, right? And that helps us, that informs our build in the first place. But what it really does is it takes your ideas and it breaks it down into different tools and problem sets that you can attack and be more smart about the way you address them. But in the social impact space, what design thinking leads us to do is it's kind of the gateway to systems thinking. Like, is the problem I'm solving, am I the best person to solve this problem? Is the solution I'm thinking of in the correct ecosystem? Am I addressing the actual gap, or am I just creating a band-aid? So that's why we really like insist on doing the whole design thinking process. Besides the practicality of it, is really understanding, really building empathy for the people that you're trying to solve the problem for. That's what I love about it. And taking that and applying it into a repeatable process like design sprints, that really just helps speed up that design process.
With the social impact clients that you have worked with, when you start talking about design thinking and going into that topic, is that something that they've ever been introduced to, or is there any pushback?
Definitely. There's always a pushback. Even on Twitter itself, right? Whenever I tweet about no code, you know, I get pretty high engagement. But then when I tweet about design thinking, no one really responds, save for like people that are into design thinking themselves already.
Does it also get called human design?
Human-centered design.
Human-centered design, right?
Yep.
So it's going back to what you were saying about empathy. It's not looking at necessarily the actual product and the development. It's taking a more overarching look at the whole problem you're trying to solve, and, you know, making sure that whatever solution that you come up with is obviously effective and it's not causing any negative impact on other elements.
Yeah, definitely. You know, like how is my solution affecting underrepresented communities or like marginalized like users as well? It's not just also, okay, I'm going to solve a productivity problem, but who are you leaving out of the solution as well?
Right. An example of maybe where they didn't think about this, and I always talk about Tom's Shoes, which it was kind of the OG in social enterprise in the buy one, we give one model. Yeah. The problem there, what they didn't, and they already know that they kind of made a mistake, but they would donate all these shoes to different countries. But what that was doing was disrupting the local shoemakers and the local community. So they're actually doing kind of more damage. So human-centered design is thinking about that whole
ecosystem.
ecosystem of what your product or service is doing in the market.
I'll give you another example. Let's say you create an app that helps people find where like refillable water stations are. Let's say water is scarce in like this particular area. So you're going to make an app that says, okay, there are water stations here, here, and here. And like on the surface, you look like you're solving a problem. You're helping people find the water. You're letting them know where the water is. But even if we're a product design agency, we try to be really assess and we tell our clients that, okay, maybe the solution isn't an app because that addresses the gap, but it doesn't like close it, because the gap,
right.
The gap really is, why is there no water in this area, right? So maybe the government needs to like create more infrastructure to bring water to that area. And so maybe an app is a temporary solution, but then maybe what if the solution is a newsletter that informs people on how to move the policy and how to get that movement towards getting that infrastructure that they need. So that's where we also save you a little heartache later on when your app is actually short-lived. You put like all this money into it, but then it'll only solve the problem for like 6 months, for as long as water is being delivered to that area.
So Design Off the Boat is not just a design and development studio. You actually come in and reassess the whole problem solution that a company is trying to achieve. It warrants kind of investing a little more up front, so you don't go and spend tens of thousands of dollars on creating an app or a product or something like that that does harm or doesn't work.
It helps us as an agency too, right? If we're constantly trying to create features for the wrong solution, it's going to feel like it's a never-ending project, because the clients are going to keep coming back asking for features that are just like band-aids to this and this and that. And eventually, you know, a stack of band-aids is going to come apart and we're going to be exhausted. The client's going to hate us. So we're really trying to prevent the burnout and keep like a healthy relationship by addressing the root cause of the problem.
So you've designed and you've come up with a solution. you use no code to execute and to build that solution. Do you want to give no code a bit of an introduction of what that is?
I can start with a story. So I work with a company called Needslist. I'm the UX lead there. And the way Needslist started was during the refugee crisis. You know, they were trying to respond to the needs of the refugees that were like traveling, and they were using like spreadsheets to, you know, communicate what the needs were on the ground, like trying to get people to donate things. But spreadsheets were clunky. People couldn't really see what they could take, and like people weren't like updating it so easily or at all, because like they were caught up like in the whole chaos of this. Yeah. And what Needslist did was they use the wedding registry to manage all of that. So even if it's like super off brand, of course, you're like trying to address like a refugee crisis, like people were literally in peril. So you're not able to go out there, build an app, wait for like for a couple of months, raise money to do that. And like, you just want to help now and you want a tool that is already ready, like out of the box. So in that kind of scenario, the no code tool there is the wedding registry. So present day, there's so many tools that perform that role. So what it's done is not the absence of code, but what it does is takes existing code, you know, like repetitive things like login or login screens, like membership, data visualization, all of that. And it just puts them into modular pieces that you can stack like Lego and connect with other no code tools and different databases that could also work with other custom platforms. So that's how no code really speeds up the process, is you don't have to start everything from scratch.
What do you think the opportunity is with no code specifically in social impact and underserved communities?
Well, the benefit is I could come up with an idea tonight for my community and I could have it in the hands of like users tomorrow. You know, so a lot of things in the no code space, like the first tools that you usually use when you get into no code is, you know, all you need to know how to do is create a spreadsheet. So if I had an app idea to, you know, help people within my community, I could just go to Glide, upload my spreadsheet, pick how I'd want that to be represented. And yeah, that's it. I have something over the weekend, and if I'm lucky, it'll take off and be my new company, you know. But it fits in the whole like design thinking, design sprint validation. I'm able to test something before I build it, before I invest money into it.
Yeah, money and a lot of time. What are some of your favorite tools? Like, what are the top no-code tools and platforms that you are using and could recommend to people to, if they haven't tried anything yet?
Well, first of all, I always start with Glide. Like when I go into, you know, incubators and accelerators and I give workshops on no code, definitely always start with Glide first. They actually just rolled out their new features, but Glide is the simplest. Anyone could actually try it. It's very low risk and it's free. You can start for free. I managed to build a video based like coaching platform on Glide. And also when I was stuck, you know, when I was stranded in the Philippines, I actually built an app there. It was the first time I built with no code. It was took us 3 days to build an app that actually created a heat map of like where all the stranded Canadians in the Philippines were, finding out that it's not going to work because people were so sick of filling up their information by that time. But then we learned that when to deploy like a solution like that, right? So we did that over a weekend.
It's called Glide Apps, yeah?
Right? Yep, Glide Apps. Glide Apps. Yeah. Yep.
And you can build them for clients as well. If someone does want to reach out and explore creating a project together, and where's the best place to find you?
Well, best place is Twitter, actually. I'm usually on Twitter. It's Sticky Sisa, but I have a website called designoftheboat.com. So that's two Fs.
Yeah. So if there's female founders, and even if you're not a founder, even if you have an idea for an initiative or some kind of social impact campaign that may need some app or product, I'll include all the links to Sissa's details in the show notes so you can find her. And I'm so excited for what you're building with Design of the Boat and the people that you're helping in the work that you're doing. Thank you for coming on.
Likewise, it was my pleasure.
Sissa dropped a whole bunch of useful information in our chat that I hope you'll put to good use. First, if you have an idea for a mobile app,
Who hasn't had an idea for a mobile app? Anyway, check out Glide Apps. I've put the link in the show notes. It helps you build mobile apps and it is so easy to use. You could literally get an app live in minutes. But before you do, think about what SZA shared with us with regard to design thinking. Ask yourself, does this app really need to be created? Is it actually helping solve a systemic issue? Or is it just a band-aid that will eventually become obsolete? For more on this framework, also Google human-centered design. Okay, you rock. Thank you for showing up and listening. Until next week, keep on being you.